Hello, and welcome to Teacher Tales, a podcast from the spirit of teaching. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I invite you to join me and my guests as we get curious, explore, discover, and learn more about what is really at the heart of teaching. In each episode, we will hear the story of a teacher, what called them to teach, what are their greatest joys and challenges in teaching, what inspires them, and what are their hopes, dreams, and vision for the education of children. We will learn more about the greatest lessons they have taught and also the greatest lessons they have learned. No checklists, no standards, no reports, no paperwork, and no data. Just stories from their hearts to our hearts on a journey to celebrate what really matters in the true spirit of teaching. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Teacher Tales. And we have a really exciting guest today, and I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell you a little bit about him.
Well, hello, and it's really wonderful to be here. And I want to thank you for having me. It's wonderful to share what I do with your audience and with you, and to discuss this. I work with sound, and I'm a professional musician, and I'm a sound artist. And as a musician, for any of you teachers out there that are going to sit back and go, oh no, is this about sound? I don't know anything about sound. I mean, music, I'm not a musician. I don't play an instrument, or I have a terrible voice or anything like that. I don't have rhythm. I want to tell you right from the beginning, absolutely from the beginning, this has absolutely nothing to do with music. When you hear this word sound, so many people say to me, you mean music? That's 99% of the time I say I work with sound. Like, oh, music's so good. Because we all associate sound with being music, because the hills are supposed to be alive with the sound of music. Right? That movie that we all love. The hills are alive with birds and sheep and wind and leaves. I have never seen an orchestra up in the hills. Have you?
No.
Right? So this has absolutely nothing to do with music, and sound comes before anything we ever think of as music.
Okay.
So that's very important.
Right. And you work with teachers, and you are a teacher, and you are a award-winning jazz musician. And so tell us about your journey and how you got where you are now. And then we're going to talk about some strategies and ideas that teachers can implement in the classroom right away.
Okay. I'm a jazz musician, a composer, and I've worked writing music for film. I'm a sound artist. I've done sound for commercials, sound design. And in 1998, I created a children's jazz CD where I took a bunch of traditional children's tunes and I jazzed them up. And prior to that, I'd been a teaching artist, right? Because to make a living as an artist, as a musician, you have to sometimes do a lot of different things. So I was involved with kids who'd been incarcerated at Rikers and were turning their lives around. I ran a music program and an after-school program in New York City called The Door, which handled about 6,000 kids a year. I was a teaching artist in the tri-state area, going into schools, going to public, private schools, in different kinds of capacities, teaching different kinds of curriculums I used a sound with some high school students in a place in, where was that school? Oh, I forget, New Jersey. So I had to do a lot of things, and I made this children's jazz CD. Richie Havens, I don't know if you know Richie Havens, the singer, the folk singer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Richie sang a couple of tunes. He sang Grandfather's Clocks and Oh Susanna. And So I took all these traditional children's tunes and jazzed them up. And it was called Jazzmatazz. And it came out in 98. And it was kind of before kids became, it was like in the early 2000s, there was more stuff going on for kids commercially for like children's records, children's rock and roll, people like Dan Zanes and Lori Berkner and that and the folk scene. That was, and in the jazz world, nobody really knew what to do with it, especially not in 98. So, but I started doing teaching and I started doing a music workshop assembly program that young audiences would book me, and I was being booked all around. And I started doing a bunch of work with special needs schools because they're somebody in Young Audiences New York had gotten this grant for just special needs schools. Because, like you were saying, as music's been cut from programs and everything else, they are the most left out community of the arts and that. So whoever did this was so wonderful, and they did it. And I ended up come up, came, got involved with Young Audiences. And I loved it. So I just said, yeah, I did tons of schools. And I did this one school with this one of the, and I would get kids up to sing and scat sing and interact, because as a special needs teacher says about me, she said, this wonderful teacher, Elise Sobel, said, Hayes doesn't think of what a child can't do. He only thinks of what they can do. So it opens up a whole new world, right? So I had the, and this wonderful teacher from District 75 school in Queens, New York, asked me to come and do a residency program with her students. So we did an intensive 10-day residency where I was there every day. And I was had the kids playing flutophones, which are kind of like a recorder, but they're not as shrill. So for kids who have autism, it's not as loud, and it's much more available. And it was about playing a note on, off, quiet, long, loud, so loud, soft, short and long, high and low. And the kids it just took off, and it just became this thing about, how you want to make that sound and listening to each other. So if you play a sound, you have to stop and listen so that somebody else can play a sound, and then you listen to it, interact with it. And that was really the beginning of creative sound play, because it was, and it was, yes, it was kind of, I was working in that way. And then I did some more activity, some more workshops at the special needs high school. And because the principal really got it too. So I came back and worked with a bunch of kids over different periods. And, some kids started to talk. Some kids who had, social emotional challenges and didn't want to participate and were angry, all of a sudden, just by making a clap, were able to communicate. Another kid was always, he was autistic, was always told that he was a mimic. And we did a call and response, he and I, and that call and response, at first he said no, he couldn't do it. And all this stuff that had been put in his head by all these people around him said to him, you are a mimic, And I got him to just have a call and response with me where he led. And when he led, all of a sudden, he didn't trust it, and he did it again, and I responded to him, and then he led and I responded again. And all of a sudden his eyes got so wide, and he stood up and he came over and gave me a huge hug. Because at that moment, it's like, you never know what these kids are thinking and feeling. But at that moment, he realized, and this is what sound does, not music. This is what sound affords teachers, a way to get their kids to interact and communicate and take risks and have fun, because it's play-based. It's a, sound is play-based. I don't know of anybody who doesn't like to make sound. You must love to make sound. Look at all those toys behind you and everything.
Well, I was a language teacher, so I had a lot of cultural things that would stimulate kids to communicate and talk and everything.
Okay,
So.
well, I want to talk to you about that because I need someone like you to help me with something. And I'll share with this. Can I break into this, share with this right now?
Is it sure?
Okay. So I teach a class on the National Head Start Association's website and on the academy. And I had a teacher that I was teaching, online, and she had these kids. So I do a thing. Let me do something one right real quick. So I'm gonna clap, right? What I'm gonna give you right now, for all you teachers, this is gonna be what's called the quick focus warm-up. And it's really great. Zap, 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 zap. Blah, 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 blah. Zap, 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 zap. Blah, 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 blah. Blee, blah. And what sound does, because we were talking about this just a little bit, and I got on to this tangent. What sound does for kids who have speech delays and language delays is that I had this teacher who took this course from NHSA, and they were saying that she was saying that her children were having, because they're having trouble processing words, they weren't able to express themselves, and they were getting frustrated. So they were acting out their frustration of not being able to make them their needs heard or express themselves. So they were hitting and they were grabbing and they were reaching out, doing all this, what seemingly seems as aggressive behavior. But what happened was once this teacher started teaching her teacher, because she was a coach, about doing this quick focus warm-up, zap, 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 bleep, blah, 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 zap, 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 where anything goes, we're talking about sound, anything goes, that all of a sudden, those children who had language delays started to be creative on their own right and were saying, and started to make their own sounds, their own ways of communicating. And it wasn't necessary to reach out and grab and hit now because they were able to express themselves with just fun sounds because the teacher had given them opportunity and then license or license and opportunity to say, hey, funny sounds can be cool. So when you said you do speech and language, I am sure, and I don't come from that. I'm very much an intuitive teacher, and I don't come from that schooled aspect of it, but I know that there are probably types of syllables or sounds, the phonics, the phonemics, right? The sounds of the sp, k, h, right? That probably if you start working with sound in terms of how you're going to work with it, and we were discussing this, you, I, we, the three elements of which is pitch, whether high like a bird or low like a lion. Remember, teachers, this is about sound, so it's not music, right? How loud or how quiet? And how long or how short? Like one clap. And as soon as you start to think in those terms, and that's all you have to think about, pitch, volume, and duration, then all of a sudden the world of sound begins to open up. And what is the one thing that every child absolutely loves and adores doing? More than anything, they do it alone, they do it in groups. Make sound. Right? And as soon as you start to make an intentional, deliberate sound, a sound in a type of way, choose to say, okay, I want to make a high sound. Well, how do you want to make that high sound? Is it going to be loud? Is it going to be quiet? Is it going to go from quiet to loud? And then back again. Right? I mean, and it's you don't have to be a singer, you don't have to be a musician, you don't have to be, all you have to do is want to groove on sound. And as soon as you have your students doing that, you're focusing your students and they're developing their executive function skills. And the attributes to executive function we know are inhibitory control, self-regulation, working memory, right? So inhibitory control, listening before sounding out, being in the moment, right? Being able to be self-regulated or whatever in the moment, in the place. Working memory, being able to follow directions, being able to think of all the different ways in which you can do something. Keeping all the possibilities in mind, and cognitive flexibility and creativity. So you start plugging into each one of those aspects just by making sound and being thoughtful about the type of sounds you want to make.
Well, if you think about it, as a kid, a lot of kids, make sounds, they make noise, and they're shushed. Don't make so much noise. Be quiet. Stop doing that. That's annoying, And so, like
Well,
you said, they find other ways of communicating besides through words or sound or that sort of thing.
so let's take that example. I love you. You are amazing. Because you just so for example, what's the if you become familiar with sound, right? You can start instead of when a kid comes in and they're really loud, and granted, sound can be extremely disruptive and very jarring, especially a one we're not used to it, and all the a blast, right? It can be very uncomfortable. But instead of being punitive and saying to a child, "Shh, don't make that loud sound," you say to that child, "Wow, that sound was a little hard for me to." You can be honest. You can say the sound was jarring. I bet you can't make that sound quiet, though. And then have that child make it quiet and then say, "Can you make it a little bit more louder, a little medium? Now make it loud again and then make it quiet." And let's talk about that sound. And what's happening there is that that child's then give you're giving the opportunity and license for the child to make the sound in all different kinds of ways so that they get to hear and reflect. And because sound is immediate, understand that what they do matters. And they're developing the chops, the ability to say it at different levels.
Well, kids just want to be seen and heard. So, no matter how they're being heard, like you said, with sounds or with words or with actions, because actions can be very loud and clear as well as to what they're trying to communicate.
And you just led into the next part. Silence. Children also love to make silence. Right? I was doing a gig with my jazz and matazz ensemble, right? My trio. I have a bass and drums I used to play with all over. I've been to Europe with it. And we did assembly programs for kids and families and I was doing this one. I did a once a month at a club in New York, the Bowery Poetry Club. It was on the Bowery, every Sunday, once a month on a Sunday morning. And so there's a beautiful beat poet from the like 50s and 60s. Her name is Hetty Jones, and Hetty came with her grandson, and I got her, and I had all these little party favor sounds. The party, you go to a party and have the things you squeeze and it makes hong hong, and you hit and it goes squeak squeak, and the rattle and all that stuff. So I had all these kids. Had about, oh, I don't know, I must have had about 10 kids, all like between 3 and 5 on the bandstand, right? Because they were going to be my they all had a little thing of thing to hit, tambourines and whatnot, and to make sound. And Hetty came up to read a poem, and we all started doing it, and the kids were just making too much sound. Hetty was getting really frustrated. Hetty was like in her 70s at the time. She looks at me, she goes, "Hey, this isn't working." I stop it. I stop it. I look at the kids. I say, "Listen, everybody, make a sound." They all made a sound. I said, "Now make silence." Or I said, "Play silence." They all held the instruments and they did this. I said, "Okay, so now you have to. If you play a sound, then you have to play silence. You play one sound and then you play silence. Let's practice that." And they all went, "La, da, da, da," and then they played silence. And they go, and I said, "Now you don't have to play together. So you can play your sound when you want, but play your sound and then you have to play silent. So now that made it possible. So each of the kids started thinking about when they wanted to make their sound and do it. And all of a sudden, there was all this space of silence for Hetty to fill it in with her poem. And
Amazing.
it was magic. And it was just providing kids, these young children, with the opportunity to say, okay, we're going to play sound and then we're going to play silence. And they love playing a silence. And silence is extremely important because it gives kind of like shape to where the sounds begin and it's a pause, it's breath. And it builds tension.
Anticipation.
Exactly.
It's a
It's
hook.
it absolutely is a hook. And you know, and children respond amazing to silence. You
What's
know,
an attention getter? I mean, in the classroom, teachers have all kinds of cues from holding their hand in the air to putting their finger over their lips, to indicate silence, and they want the kids to pay attention and everything. But I think what you're saying is that you can use sound with, the three different elements, and you can get their attention that way. And why would they want attention? So we're going to, pun intended, transition into how teachers can use trans sound with
with transitions.
transitions and to get kids to pay attention or to transition into another activity, because there is so much time that is lost, especially within inexperienced teachers that are not really proficient at that yet, and then they end up getting frustrated and yelling at the kids, which just causes more frustration and bad behavior. So I think this would be great for them to know how to use sound to transition kids, to use those in the classroom.
Well, thank you again because you've just led into the. So, for all you teachers out there that are thinking about this, I'm going to say something that might be real, like you're going to think, oh, this guy's really out of his mind. Okay, are you ready? Are we all ready out there, teachers? I got to hear you say, yes, what is it? Transitions actually is the way into working with sound. And it's such a beautiful. Transitions are gems. They can provide you with an opportunity to really get your kids ready and on point. And let's just think about one aspect about transitions before I totally get into it. Transitions are repetitive, right? Which is part of the reason why it becomes so stressful for teachers because you think you have to have this incredible tool chest filled with activities, plural, right? So there's so much that you have to know to work with. Transitions are these incredible gems that really a transition is all of what, 5 to 15 seconds to. I mean, the transitions are anywhere from 5 seconds to 5 minutes. I understand that. Not one transition fits all transitions. But really, it's just about getting the kids focused and engaged. And as soon as they're focused and engaged, bam, it's ready to move them from the floor to the tables or getting them on point, right? So that we can do the next activity or whatever we're going to do, if we're going to start to clean up the room, if we're going to whatever. Transitions, so oftentimes transitions for children, they don't know what to expect. So repetition makes children feel calm and safe, right? When they want to do listen to the same music all the time, they want to listen to watch the same show all the time, hear the same story, it helps them feel comfortable. And it's part of our how we learn. We're doing this. When you start to engage children with sound, first of all, they love to make sound. So they'll stop doing what they're doing to make a sound. They'll put a French fry down to make a sound, right? And When you start to make a sound in an intentional way, in a deliberate way, with an intentional type of sound, or an intentional sound in a deliberate type of way, and we're focusing on, it's immediately plugging into EF, right? Got to go back to EF. It's inhibitory control, working memory, cognitive flexibility. As soon as you do that, whether it's you're saying, okay, I did the quick focus warm-up in the beginning. If you do the quick focus warm-up when you come in to every day, and that's what you do, and you go, zap, 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 please. Everybody's gonna go, whoa, zap, 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 wee, and they're gonna give it back to you. There's a transition right there. It could be a hello, however you wanna do it. And then what you do as your children, because what's gonna start to happen is that your children, you're giving your children opportunity to do something that they love to do. And they're gonna get ready to do it, and then you give it to them to lead. And as your children are leading it, they're going, whoa, okay, cool. So they're growing. So that simple aspect of tuning into the sound, and just making funny sounds, all of a sudden focuses and engages and becomes a transition.
So you're
And
saying that the teacher could actually have a student create a sound that then draws the attention of the class. It doesn't always have to be the teacher.
yes, and what does that do for the teacher? That makes it possible for the teacher to switch from always being the leader to now becoming the facilitator. And there could be a time when somebody throws up or spills something, and the teacher's by themselves and has to do something. They can look at their kids and say, hey, can you lead that activity? And you can practice these activities. And that's why the book is incredibly comprehensive. And it gives you, and there's also a quick start guide. So that gives you basically four approaches using pitch, volume, and duration to organize sound in very specific ways that can help your students and help you navigate the different types of transition times. Like, there's a different type of transition that you might use when you're walking the kids down the halls to lunch, or coming back, excuse me, coming back from the gym, or coming back from outside, or lining up.
That's when they're
And
needed the most.
what?
That's when they're needed the most.
Right, but it could be,
When, yeah.
but you could be working with sound when you're and teaching your curriculum. I when I do these things with, it's wonderful, like, the conferences with teachers, and I talk about it, and they hear about it, and they look at it, and they go, when I say transitions are these perfect gems, because you can practice, you can use that same, you can take a transition. And you can decide, okay, this is what I'm going to do in the morning. And I'm going to, just, I don't know, I'm going to mess around with volume. Hello, what? Ooh. Anything. And all of a sudden, so that's your first transition. Do it again for the second transition. Do it again and change it up. Add a little variation. You can start to use this with any. Really, you can integrate all of the curricula and subject matter that you want to. So I have teachers coming in after, and I'm looking at a couple hundred teachers, and about midway you start to see the lights go on in their heads, and they're like, whoa, and they come up and they say, man, I can't wait to get to class to check this out, because it will help you manage your kids, teach them, and teach them what you want to teach them.
Well, I know you were kind of running out of time here, so I want to make sure that everybody knows I'm going to put your website in the
Please.
podcast notes, link to your book,
My book,
and
yes, a big book.
and you have got a ton of resources, a wealth of knowledge, and we want to make sure that that gets into the hands of the teachers and the schools too, because you still do in-person
I
visits
do,
as well.
I do, I do professional development workshops. I do it online. I do it in person. If a district wants to get access to it, and they have it with their teachers, and their teachers can get a certificate, I have it on a learning management system so that the teachers see this is for the Quick Start Guide. And also, let me just share something that I do online coaching sessions, and the whole point is to do this in every which way to get it in the hands of you teachers who are my heroes. Teachers are my heroes, and they're my heroes because you guys don't do this for the money. Like I didn't do this for the money. I've hardly made any money the last 25 years creating this. I've done it really in the spirit, just like teachers, because I saw this when I, and the reason why I told you that it came out of special needs is because it came out of special needs, and I was doing stuff with jazzmatazz and kids, and I just went, wow, this is really important information, mm-hmm. you know? And it was like, okay, how to get it to where it has to get to, and how to work it. And I worked in a beautiful, I mean, this incredible Head Start program on the Upper East Side, I invited me in because some developmental neuroscientists had introduced me to say he needs to codify this method and he needs to work with pre-K teachers. And that's how it was. I mean, I went for 5 years, you know, on my own dime, on my own time to codify this so that, mm-hmm. so that it's available. And so it's available from the website where I can do Zoom coaching sessions, and the class is both, you know, video curriculum for the Quick Start Guide and for many other areas. So outside of just pre-K, it is, I see the time, that's where it is. So it opens up into hand percussion instruments and creating sound sculptures for culminating year-end performances for kids and families.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Well, I hope the teachers check it all out, because like I said, you have so much to offer them, and it's very much needed now, especially after the pandemic. So thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for allowing me to go off into this sound land, and for you and your audience. It's been a total pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hello again, everyone. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I'd like to invite you to nominate a teacher to be a guest on the podcast and to share their story. All you have to do is go to www.spiritofteaching.org and fill out the nomination form. Again, that's www.spiritofteaching.org. Also, please share, rate, and give some feedback to help us better serve you in the spirit of teaching. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to having you back next time on Teacher Tales.